Welcome to Divorce Talk, a podcast for people who are contemplating divorce, going through one, or would like to know everything about the divorce process. Each episode, you'll hear from Chicago divorce lawyers from Bierman LLP, one of the largest divorce and family law firms in the state of Illinois, speak on all things divorce, from child custody, divorce litigation, mediation, the collaborative process, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, the Bierman Divorce Lawyers.
Hi, I'm Sandra Napoli Diarco. I'm here today with John Diarco and Jessica Boyke, and we are speaking about maintenance. So before we get into the subject matter, I'll have John and Jessica tell us a little bit about themselves. Jessica?
I'm Jessica Boyke. I have been practicing for over 12 years, born and raised in Illinois, and a proud graduate of the U of I. I currently live with my husband and two kids in the suburbs, along with our two wonderful puppies.
And my name is John Diarco. I've been practicing for 20 plus years, born and raised in Chicago, still live in Chicago with my wife, Sandra, and our two children, both who are teenagers. So obviously we are challenged in trying to deal with them, but we do the best we can.
All right, great. So let's just jump right into it. John, what is maintenance and who is entitled to receive maintenance in a divorce?
So, maintenance is someone's right to support from their spouse, and depending upon the situation, a spouse may or may not be entitled to maintenance. It depends on a number of factors, probably the most important factor being the incomes of each party. And when you have a situation where one party's earning substantially more income than the other party, then that party who's not earning the income would be entitled to maintenance, presumably. And there's a number of different factors that go into it. And there's a formula that the legislature has passed to calculate what that obligation should be under the guidelines. But that formula is not always used.
So just to clarify, because I've seen different words out there, is it always referred to as maintenance or is it spousal support or does it go under different names? Or is it always maintenance?
Well, it's currently called maintenance per the statute. However, it is also referred to in layman's terms as spousal support. It was formerly known as alimony and whatnot. Okay. But the formal terminology is maintenance.
Okay, great. And I've heard that there's temporary maintenance. What is that, Jessica?
Temporary maintenance is support that is paid during the pendency of a case. So if there needs to be an exchange of funds during such time as when a petition for dissolution is pending, support can be paid on a temporary basis, thus called temporary maintenance.
Got it. Okay. Now, I understand the law has changed. What is the major difference between the old law and the new law?
So the law has changed, and the reason for the change was the tax law changes that were passed by the Trump administration, which essentially eliminated the tax deductions that people were unable to take for payment of maintenance. So historically, when somebody was paying maintenance, they were able to deduct the amount they paid to their spouse on their taxes and receive a tax deduction because of that. The spouse who was receiving the maintenance would have to claim the amount they received as income and therefore have to pay tax on that money. The new tax laws that went into effect eliminated that deduction, and therefore the Illinois legislature changed their laws so that maintenance is now calculated on a net income versus a gross income, which means it's no longer taxable to the person that's receiving it, and it is not tax deductible to the person that is paying it. So the one exception to that is if you are grandfathered in by having an obligation that existed prior to the change of the law, you are still able to take those deductions.
And when did this take place, the law change?
The law changed, well, the tax laws changed when the Trump administration passed their change in the tax laws, and the Illinois legislature changed the law in 2018.
So if someone...
The effect of it started in January of 2019.
Got it. So if someone got married or divorced in 2015, for instance, but they were grandfathered in, then they would still be able to claim deductions.
They are still able to take their deduction, and then the person receiving it is still obligated to pay income on or income tax on the amount that they're being paid.
Understood. Jessica, are there Any situations where one party benefits from the new maintenance law?
Not really. Unfortunately, both parties are adversely impacted by the new change in the law. So the reason why it was beneficial is essentially the different tax rates that both parties were paying would be lesser after the payment of maintenance than it would otherwise been if you weren't paying maintenance. So the idea was essentially to arbitrage the taxes and what you would pay to the government. Now, because it's a net number, both parties or the payor is paying at their normal tax rate, which is generally higher because you don't have that large off-the-top deduction. So unfortunately, it adversely impacts both parties, adversely impacts more so the payor in most of the circumstances, but the legislature really tried to assure that both parties were being impacted in a somewhat equitable way.
So what are some of the factors, John, that affect whether a person should or should not receive maintenance?
So as I stated before, the probably biggest factor is the income of the parties. So if you have a situation where you're contemplating divorce and your income is the same or similar to your spouse's income, then the court isn't going to award maintenance in those circumstances. However, if one spouse, let's say, has been, you know, a stay-at-home parent and has not been employed for some period of time, and the other parent has been employed and earning an income, then that probably is a situation where someone, you know, the spouse being stay at home would receive maintenance. And that's probably the biggest factor. There's probably around 12 factors that the courts can look at when determining whether or not someone's entitled to maintenance. So there's also the issue of how long have they been married? What property are they going to each receive as a result of the divorce? What's been their standard of living during the time that they've been married? And what would need to be paid to have somebody still enjoy that standard of living? So those are probably the biggest factors that the courts look at. And then there's the guidelines that we talked about, which under the new law establishes a set guideline for the courts to look at and calculate to try to figure out what the maintenance amount should be and for how long it should be paid. The courts aren't required to use the guidelines, and they're only using them to give them an idea of what the amount should be. And then there's an ability of the courts or in any settlement to deviate from those guidelines and come up with an amount that's appropriate given the circumstances. So what I try to do when I'm meeting with a client is figure out what their expenses are, what their needs are, and then figure out how much income they may or may not have, and then what amount of support are they going to need to be able to pay all of their expenses, assuming that they're separated and no longer living in the same household.
And Jessica, how long does someone receive maintenance? I know John alluded to, you know, the court will look at a number of factors, but on average, if there is an average, how long would one be entitled to maintenance?
Well, it is something that the court considers along with all the different factors that John had just elicited. But essentially, the guidelines that are set forth in the statute provide a certain percentage of the duration would be a percentage of the length of the marriage at the time of the filing of a divorce. So for example, if you were married for 5 years and one day at the date that you filed your petition for dissolution of marriage, you would be getting support for a period of 0.2 times the length of the marriage, so 20% of 5 years. That percentage goes up 0.4 for every single year of marriage at the time that the petition is filed. For example, if you were married for 6 years or less, it would be 0.24. If you were married 7 years or less, it'd be 0.28. And it goes up and up until such time as a length of a marriage is 20 years, at which time the court has the ability to order maintenance equal to the length of the marriage or for an indefinite period of time. The court, however, can always set support for a different duration of time based upon a bunch of different factors. It could set it for a lesser period of time. You can come in for a review, meaning maybe you only get 1 year of maintenance, but you can come at that time and seek for an additional extension of time. So the court has, again, these guidelines that are afforded to it, but the courts do on occasion deviate from that to ensure that all parties are receiving an equitable divorce.
Really, the idea and probably the most beneficial thing anybody can do is try to reach an agreement on these issues outside of court. So you don't need the court to make a decision. These issues of maintenance and how long should it be paid for, what should the amount be. And most of the cases are resolved through a settlement where the parties are negotiating the terms of the maintenance, the amount, the duration, whether it's going to be indefinite or for a fixed term. And that gives both parties the ability to control the outcome and the situation versus relying on a judge to just come up with the amount and the duration, listening to the testimony at a trial. So we always try to, in all of our cases, come up with a way to settle the issue versus trying to have to litigate it if we can. There are circumstances where you have to litigate certain issues, but it's usually in everybody's best interest to try to resolve those issues outside of court if you can.
Makes sense. Jessica, you had spoken about temporary maintenance. So does the overall maintenance get affected if one receives temporary maintenance?
The court does have the discretion to essentially give a credit for any payments made of maintenance during the pendency of the case. So for example, if a court found that a payer was supposed to pay 20 months of maintenance, but that person paid 6 months during the pendency of the case, the court has within its discretion to give that credit such that the ultimate obligation would be 14 months. It's not something that is guaranteed, but it's always something you should consider when you're presenting your case.
Okay. I'm sure both of you have seen situations where the party who's earning more doesn't want to pay maintenance or doesn't want to pay as much maintenance as is recommended. What options are there for people who don't want to pay maintenance?
So there are a number of different options available. The probably most common option would be to give the other spouse, meaning the spouse who would otherwise be entitled to maintenance, a disproportionate share of the marital estate. So let's say you're dividing your assets, and in a normal situation, you would divide them 50-50. However, if one party is willing to waive any right or claim to maintenance, then you might be willing to give that party an extra percentage of the marital estate. Maybe you divide it 55%, 45%, 60-40, so that extra 5 or 10% of the estate is in lieu of them receiving maintenance payments from the spouse who would otherwise be obligated to pay that. The benefit of that to the party paying is they know what their obligation is. It's set. It can't be modified. They don't have to worry about going to court later and for their spouse or ex-spouse asking for additional maintenance payments to be made. The advantage for the spouse receiving it is they know what they're going to receive, so they don't have to worry about their spouse losing their job and what happens with their maintenance payments. So it's a win-win for both parties, assuming that it can be negotiated under terms that are favorable. There are some disadvantages to each side as well. That being the person paying, maintenance terminates under circumstances. So if a spouse remarries or if a spouse cohabitates, it means live with somebody that they're dating on a regular basis, that is a basis to terminate any maintenance payments you have to make to your spouse. So the person paying this extra amount of property in lieu of maintenance is considering the fact that, well, maybe I'd be able to terminate it if my soon-to-be ex-spouse is going to get remarried soon or is going to live with somebody. So there are certain circumstances that you have to take into consideration to see whether or not that makes sense to give them this lump sum amount in lieu of maintenance, or whether it's likely that they're going to do something that would potentially terminate the obligation earlier.
That's interesting. I would never think of that. I mean, clearly there's a good amount of strategy involved in that, that you lawyers, you know, and that's why people hire you, right? Because just a normal layperson would never even think about that.
And I would just say that, I mean, that's our primary objective, is just to educate and to assure that our clients understand those pros and cons, because ultimately it's the client's decision, but we just want to make sure they're able to make that decision and can make it confidently.
Right. And like you say, a lot of strategy goes into those decisions, because if, for instance, and this happens a lot, somebody's already in a relationship while they're going through a divorce, and it's likely that they're going to live with this person or get remarried to the person, then from a strategy standpoint, you may not want to pay them a lump sum for maintenance because you know they're probably going to move in or marry this person and maintenance will be terminated anyway.
So let's just take that situation, for instance. Let's just say husband, wife. The husband feels that he's the person that will be paying maintenance to the wife. He believes that she will remarry shortly after the divorce proceeding. You know, and he says to you, John, let's do the
monthly basis.
I'm sure there's a lot of argument going back and forth. How does that play out?
What could happen, I mean, we would have a discussion, the client and I, about what the likelihood would be that they would get remarried and how soon that would happen and what the numbers look like and whether from a strategy standpoint it makes sense to make a lump sum or to simply pay it on a monthly basis. A lot of times, like I say, sometimes they're already living with the person. So in those circumstances, it's kind of a no-brainer to say there is no maintenance because they're already cohabitating. And once you cohabitate, you can't take it back. So if there's a circumstance where while you're going through the divorce, the other spouse moves in with somebody and starts cohabitating, they've essentially eliminated their rights to receive maintenance on an ongoing basis. But let's assume that they haven't, but the belief is that they will, then a couple of things would happen. Either we would just simply pay on a monthly basis with the assumption that that's going to stop in a relatively short period of time, or adjust the amount that we're going to pay in a lump sum or in a percentage of the estate based upon the fact that the likelihood is that it's only going to be paid for a short period of time, and so we reduce the amount that they would otherwise receive in the lump sum.
Okay. So once a decision is made on maintenance and everyone goes on their jolly way and a couple months go by or maybe 6 months go by and one party decides that they don't like this agreement, can they go back to the court and change things? Can it be modified?
Well, it depends on how you draft your ultimate agreement. So the parties have the ability to either label maintenance as modifiable or non-modifiable. Child support, as just to contrast, is always modifiable. Even if you want to agree it's non-modifiable, you can't. It's against public policy. Maintenance, you can do it either way. However, in order to modify maintenance, you have to demonstrate a substantial change in circumstance. So the passage of a couple months with both parties making approximately the same income or whatnot, that would not be a basis to modify. If a party who's paying support loses their job 2 months later, that could be a basis to seek a modification. And so you always have to kind of think through the potential possibilities when you're drafting your final agreements.
And Jessica, are there ever situations where one party who is paying maintenance just quits their job because they don't want to pay maintenance?
That never happened. Yes, unfortunately, we have seen those circumstances. Luckily, the legislature has afforded the courts the ability to impute income to parties who are either underemployed or voluntarily unemployed. So a party could try and quit their job to avoid that obligation, but ultimately the court will still enforce those support obligations and likely in the same amounts. So if you decide to quit your job because you don't want to pay, the likelihood is you're going to have to keep paying at that same amount and you're going to have to start tapping in the assets to do it. So it's generally not a good idea.
Okay.
So yeah, there was a case that was up, went to the appellate court where a doctor decided he didn't want to pay maintenance any longer and decided he was going to become a nurse and make essentially a quarter of what he was earning as a doctor so that he wouldn't have to pay his ex-wife maintenance. And the courts held that while they couldn't force him to stay employed as a doctor, they could continue to make him pay support as if he was earning the amount of money he was earning as a doctor. Mm. So even with his nurse's salary, like Jessica said, he'd had to pay the same amount of support and use his assets to make up the difference.
What if he made an argument that he just needed something less stressful and to take care of his children? I guess
it's a difficult argument to make when you're having a maintenance obligation, because the idea is, and people do it, like Jessica says, they try to, in certain circumstances, reduce their income to avoid the support obligation. But to your point, if the circumstances warrant it and, you know, there's health concerns and there's evidence to show that this job that they have is bad for their health and they need to change jobs, then that circumstance would probably warrant a modification of the maintenance.
Or at least a consideration.
Right.
Okay. So tell me about child support and how that affects maintenance.
So the amount of child support that somebody pays doesn't necessarily affect maintenance. It's kind of the opposite. So when you are receiving maintenance from your ex-spouse, even though it's not taxable to you, that is income that is considered for the calculation of child support. So under Illinois law, both parties' incomes are factored into the equation when they're determining what the child support amount should be. So even if somebody doesn't have a job, if they're receiving maintenance, that amount of money is going to count against them as income when the child support calculation is being made, which ultimately then would reduce the amount of child support they would otherwise receive if they had no income.
Okay, great. Well, this has been fascinating. I know I've learned a lot of things about maintenance.
Don't give any ideas. Yeah.
Call me anytime.
All I know is 20 years, I'm good. Is there anything any of you would like to wrap up with?
I would just say that all of these areas are ones that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. And so maintenance can be seemingly pretty clear-cut by these guidelines, but there's always arguments that you could be made on both sides in consideration. So I'd always suggest that if there's any questions, reach out to someone, a trusted advisor, either, at our office or whatnot. We can answer any questions.
Right. I would agree. I think what we try to do is educate people, as mm-hmm. Jessica said. So to the extent that people have questions, and they always will have plenty of questions, go to an expert that knows what they're doing. All we do is family law and this type of work. So this is our specialty, and we'd be happy to help out.
Great. Well, if you'd like to learn more about John or Jessica, please visit our website at www.beermanlaw.com. Please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook and LinkedIn, and we look forward to seeing you on a next podcast. And this isn't the last you'll see of Jessica or John, because they'll be back speaking on a different divorce-related topic. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Divorce Talk. Visit our website at www.beermanlaw.com, where you can subscribe to the show so you'll never have to miss a single one. Please also follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating. Be sure to tune in next time for another enlightening episode.